was on a conveyor belt. Only her feet were exposed. The workers thought it was a mannequin. Her last hours on Earth were not pleasant.
Young women murdered or missing. Families in anguish.
I would text her, and she would text right back. But this time, nothing.
When they killed her, they killed me.
A serial killer at work. And maybe he had a friend.
That's crazy. They don't work together. Serial killers are loners.
Very rare.
Two suspected killers on the hunt. Hunting them, a detective devoted to justice, and more.
It's almost like you've adopted these young women.
There was a lot of visits to my local church saying, please don't let me screw this up.
Here's Keith Morrison with Good and Evil.
How do you measure a mother's love or gauge the ferocity of her impulse to protect?
Love her as much as I could. It was about the only thing.
How to measure love as visceral as the beating heart in her own body?
She was my firstborn. She was my best friend.
How to understand the four mothers you'll meet tonight and their connection, one that not one of them would ever have thought possible, not in a million years. Any more than they would have expected to meet her, their guardian angel.
If I don't bring her home, who will?
It's a rare mystery that's truly a confrontation of good and evil.
We have to go to the dark places in order to find answers.
A rare mystery that needed an urgent answer before the evil struck again. It was March 14th, 2014, early morning. An army of garbage trucks made their growling, clanking way around the thousands of trash bins and dumpsters in Anaheim, California. Their destination, a landfill that is also a literal mountain of garbage, 500 feet high. And then, mid-morning, an attendant separating debris on the conveyor belt saw something. Was that a human foot protruding from the pile of trash? Surely not.
She was on a conveyor belt, only her feet were exposed, and initially the workers there thought it was a mannequin.
But it wasn't a mannequin, as the responding homicide detective Julissa Trapp could plainly see. It was, or had been, a woman, her body wrapped in a blue plastic tarp.
We had no idea who she was. We had no idea where she came from. How did she end up there?
Something about the dead girl got to Detective Trapp, ending up this way, an anonymous child of God in a garbage dump. And so the detective did what she always does. She bought a rosary.
It's a way for me to kind of connect to my victims.
Unusual, maybe, that a detective should lean on her profound Catholic faith to help solve crimes. But Julissa Trapp does.
Cases don't always get solved in 48 hours, you know.
Surprise, surprise.
They take time and they take work.
And that little rosary helps you.
It does.
If she could solve this case, she'd give that rosary to the dead woman's family. But first she had to figure out who she was. From just one identifying mark on her neck, a tattoo, Jody. Was that her name? Reaching now, Detective Trapp pulled up the Anaheim Police Department's database of tattoos. Yes, they have one. Descriptions of tattoos collected from anyone they encounter. And what do you know? There was a match. But her name was not Jody. It was Jeray. Jeray Estep. She was 21 years old.
She had been contacted the year prior here in Anaheim on Beach Boulevard.
Beach Boulevard? Suddenly, Detective Trapp's case took on a whole new complexion.
If you want to buy drugs, Beach Boulevard's where you come. If you are looking for a girl, Beach Boulevard's where you come. A lot of them came from good, stable families that just happened to run in to the wrong guy who somehow got them into the job. I mean, these pimps are really good about breaking down the women and getting control over them.
Making them? A prime target for predators.
A lot of predators will start with prostitutes because they think that people won't miss them.
Somebody does.
Yes. Somebody does. Somebody did.
Like Jeray's mother, who, records revealed, lived in a tiny town in Oklahoma. That tattoo on Jeray's neck? This is Jody. And even before the detective got the words out,
I felt it, that she was gone.
Her daughter had been so happy, so charming, outgoing. But then, said Jody, a boyfriend convinced Jeray that to please him, she'd have to turn tricks. This is Jeray.
He just honked, trying to get her attention, but she...
John TV, a self-proclaimed video vigilante group in Oklahoma City, caught her on camera back in 2012. But Jeray left the boyfriend, turned her life around, so Jody thought. And then that awful phone call from Detective Trapp.
I was screaming, like, screaming.
The detective made a promise to that mother. Didn't matter what choices Jeray may have made, she, the detective, would work this case as hard as any she ever had.
We literally went from each little motel to each little motel, showing her picture and having the clerk run her name to see if she had stayed there.
And eventually she found the room where Jeray had been staying, in which were $700 in cash and mascara, lipstick, contact lens solution, but nothing whatever to lead her to a suspect. Not here, anyway. From the disposal company, she got a list of the dumpsters those garbage trucks had serviced that morning. And then she and other officers went dumpster diving. Hundreds of dumpsters.
What would you be looking for?
They were all given pictures of what the trash looked like that was around her. If it looked similar, take pictures of what's inside.
No luck. Waste of time. Then, back on the conveyor belt, an odd thing turned up in the trash collected near Jeray's body.
We got a print hit.
Talking about a fingerprint here.
A fingerprint, yes.
It was on a caulking tube, and it matched someone, a window installer who worked for a company called Hardy Windows.
He tells us we never throw trash out at customers' homes. We always bring it back to Hardy Windows.
Where they found one dumpster no one had checked. The trash company, inadvertent, had left it off the list they gave the police. Detective Trapp looked inside.
It's that same blue plastic wrapping. And it was almost like I was looking at the same trash I had seen on the conveyor belt.
Bingo. And if not for that lucky fingerprint, they'd have missed it.
What was that like?
It was a combination of frustration, but okay. All right, we're moving somewhere.
So, Jeray was dumped here sometime before the morning of March 14th. Miles and miles from the spot where, according to cell phone records, she placed her very last outgoing call at 7 p.m. the night before.
How far away would it have been?
20 miles.
But that's all the detective knew. A week gone by. Everyone at Hardy Windows was cleared. So no suspects at all. Detective Trapp went to church, said her rosary, worried, prayed, and wondered.
I had heard a story on the news that there was three missing prostitutes in the city of Santa Ana.
Which is right next door, basically.
Right next door, yes.
What if this wasn't the killer's first time? Or last?
Coming up, four young women in two neighboring towns now missing or dead. Was there a link?
We were like, well, you know, what are the odds that they're related?
And mothers united by love and loss.
We made thousands of flyers. Me and her were on our mission to find our daughters.
Detective Julissa Trapp couldn't sleep, kept awake by the puzzle of the girl someone threw away in the trash. That's when something jogged her restless mind. Hadn't some young women vanished in the town next door, Santa Ana?
We were like, well, you know, what are the odds that they're related?
So she looked them up and learned about Kiana Jackson, just 20 years old when she disappeared 5 months before Jeray's death. Her mom is Kathy Menzies.
She was just a very fun-loving child, always made you laugh.
Just look at her childhood photos. That silly grin. She loved her dog, her little brother, playing softball. And then it started happening, said Kathy. Eighth grade or so.
She was kind of getting, you know, typical teenage, you know, mouthy. And then, you know, high school came. Getting around the older kids, she kind of got a little, you know, worse.
How'd you cope with that?
It's just one day at a time. I love her as much as I could. It was about the only thing.
After high school, Keanu went to college about a three-hour drive from home. A year later, she moved to Las Vegas. But though far from home now, she got closer and closer to her mom.
She would call me every day, talk to me every day, you know, text message.
Just a loving daughter.
Yeah, I didn't think anything bad was happening.
No idea, even in October 2013, when Keanu called to say...
She was on the bus towards Santa Ana.
I mean, did she tell you why? Or
visiting friends is what she told me.
But then, the girl who called her mother almost daily stopped calling.
Anything over a day or two, I would start going, wait a second, this isn't right. Something's not right. I would text her, and she would text right back. But this time, nothing. Nothing.
Gone. Not a peep to her mom, to her friends, to her boyfriend. Kathy went to the police.
When I called to file a missing persons report, they said she's an adult, and there's nothing we can do for you.
But you knew that there was a problem.
Yeah.
So Kathy started doing her own digging. Tracked her daughter down to a motel in Orange County, where the trail ended. Her clothes were there, but she wasn't. Again, she called the police.
And they said, well, that happens sometimes. Prostitutes just work circuits.
Prostitute?
First I was like, no, what, okay, no, that can't be.
But then the truth came crashing down, undeniable. Keanu had missed a scheduled court date in Santa Ana for a prostitution charge.
But wait a minute, you talked to her every day, texted with her all the time.
Exactly.
And you knew nothing of this secret life of yours?
Nope, nothing.
What does it feel like as a mother to hear that has been going on all that time and you didn't know?
Heartbreaking.
When she heard Kathy's story, Detective Trapp began to think she was onto something. And then she discovered that just 2.5 weeks after Keanu disappeared, there was another one, Josephine Monique Vargas.
She had a beautiful personality. They used to call her Giggles because she always made people laugh.
Josephine's mother, Priscilla, had been on the local news searching for answers for months, ever since her daughter left a family barbecue telling them she was walking to buy groceries.
That's the last time any of us heard of her or saw her.
Priscilla went to the Santa Ana Police Department, filled out a report.
But they didn't really do anything to look for her.
So she did.
Nothing was going to stop me from looking for my daughter. Nothing or no one.
And it was pure chance when Priscilla ran into another mother desperate to find her daughter. Martha, 28 years old and a mother herself, who just vanished one day.
There's no way she would have left. To just say, I'm going and I'm leaving everything behind.
So Martha's mother, Helinda, and Priscilla went together up and down the boulevard.
We made thousands of flyers. Me and her were on our mission to find our daughters.
But no sign of their daughters anywhere. Detective Trapp collected their portraits, hung them on her office wall, and she stayed awake and prayed in her Catholic way.
Do you ever wonder why God would allow this to happen?
I do. There's been plenty of times that I've been angry with our Maker because you have to wonder, why does this happen? I mean, I wish he would talk back to me and tell me. That would be very helpful. But I just have to figure out what happened. Just read the clues, collect the puzzle pieces, and the more you can kind of keep a neutral mind, the easier the puzzle pieces fit together.
No getting around it. The pieces pointed to a chilling conclusion. Those three missing women, just like Jeray, may have been murdered. And if that was true, it would mean there was a serial killer out there in the night. Had to be. More deaths would be coming. Unless, one idea, it was grasping at straws, yes, but...
You know what? It might work now. Why not? It's a Hail Mary, but let's try it.
Coming up,
All sex offenders on parole, they will have an anklet, a GPS monitor.
Tracking a killer, victim by victim. Or is it two killers?
They were in the same car.
They were in the same vehicle.
When Dateline continues.
The autopsy came in. The one for Jeray Estep, the girl on the conveyor belt.
It's bad. It was bad. It was bad.
Strangled, beaten, sexually assaulted, viciously, according to Deputy DA Larry Yellen.
It should have been a college girl. Yeah. Should be worrying about grades and boyfriends and football games and those things.
One wrong turn, and you never know, huh?
Yeah.
But almost 3 weeks in, Detective Julissa Trapp seemed stuck.
I think she got a little frustrated and got a little desperate and came up with the idea of using the computer database.
That is, the computer database of sex offenders. If they had a serial killer on their hands, there was at least a chance he'd already run afoul of the law at some point. It was a bit like just poking a finger into the haystack, frankly, and hoping to encounter a needle. Not worth a try. So Trapp called this woman, sexual assault detective Laura Lomelli.
All sex offenders on parole, they will have an anklet, a GPS monitor.
Trapp asked Lomelli, were any of those GPS monitors here where Jeray placed her last phone call, or here, where she wound up in a dumpster?
And if you find the same guy at both locations, you're getting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Lomelli ran the search, and what were the chances? She got a hit in both locations. She called Detective Trapp.
There's only one person. She's all, I know him. I said, who? And she's all, his name's Frank Cano. He's a registered sex offender.
In 2007, Frank Cano pleaded guilty to committing a lewd act on a minor. He was now on parole wearing a GPS monitor. But now, next question. Did Frank Cano's monitor put him near the places those other three women, according to phone records, made their last calls? Kiana, Josephine, and Martha. One by one, the detective entered the coordinates.
And every intersection for that date and time that they gave me, Frank Cano came up.
Wow.
For every single intersection, I was shocked.
But something about that man, Frank Cano. He had a buddy, and Lomelli had run into them both.
I mentioned, you know, I do know that he has a friend, that's Stephen Gordon.
Stephen Gordon. He'd done time for molesting a minor and later for kidnapping. He and Cano were inseparable, apparently. Once again, Detective Lomelli pulled up the GPS coordinates. She checked the place Martha was last seen in Santa Ana and no Gordon, not there. But when she checked locations for Kiana and Josephine, sure enough, there he was. So why not at the first location? She checked the record and discovered at that particular moment, Gordon wasn't on a GPS monitor, but he was wearing one at the other three places, and so was Cano. The electronics made it absolutely obvious. Here they were, Cano and Gordon, driving together up and down Beach Boulevard and all around Santa Ana and Anaheim.
I mean, even when they're on the freeway.
They were in the same car.
They were in the same vehicle.
Julissa Trapp had prayed for a Hail Mary, but she never expected anything like this.
I soon realized I'm not just dealing with one. We're dealing with two. Two sex offenders wearing GPS bracelets.
But for all the electronic cross-referencing, the case against Cano and Gordon was purely circumstantial. Detective Trapp could not arrest them, not without more evidence. And that was terrifying.
I mean, there were young women who were at real risk here.
Yes.
And if you waited too long,
yes,
how would you feel if somebody else was attacked?
Let me just say, there was a lot of rosaries that were being prayed, for sure.
She set up a surveillance team to watch Cano and Gordon around the clock, and got authorizations for wiretaps and pulled cell phone records.
When we started reading the text messages and started seeing how prolific they were at hunting.
hunting.
Hunting on almost a daily basis, and how nonchalant they were about it. It was almost like ordering takeout. When you start reading, what do you feel like today, Asian or Mexican?
Oh boy. What would they call these girls?
That was the other thing. Cats.
Cats?
Cat. Be careful. When the cat knows it isn't getting away, it's gonna fight.
The next victim couldn't be far away, because Gordon texted Cano, "Kitty cat later, yes?" To which Cano responded, "Okay." And then a sudden change. Had they spotted the surveillance? As Trapp listened to the wiretap, she heard Gordon talk to Cano about skipping town.
I could hear the desperation in Frank Cano's voice. That desperation just kind of sent a hair on the back of my neck, and I said, no, I'm not waiting anymore.
They're going to run.
They're going to run.
Time to move. Fast. They caught up to Frank Cano as he was boarding a bus. And Stephen Gordon? They found him where he worked, an auto body shop next door to Hardy Windows. But?
He made a run for it.
Ran out the door.
On a bicycle. Yes. He had a little collision with one of our surveillance units, and a little flying over the handlebars, and he was taken into custody.
Both men were charged with 4 counts each of first-degree murder and forcible rape.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
And Detective Trapp prepared to confront a suspected serial killer.
Coming up.
I knew this was going to be a lot different than any other interview I had done.
Takeout with a killer.
It is spicy.
I told you to be careful.
For 6 months, Kathy Menzies waited for news about her daughter, Kiana. Still woke up every day, hoping she'd call or text, and dreading a knock at the door. Which, in April 2014, is what happened.
My heart sunk when they came, because I knew right away that it wasn't going to be good news.
No, not good news at all.
Anaheim police told her that 2 men, Frank Cano and Stephen Gordon, were now under arrest for the murder of her daughter and 3 other young women in Orange County.
What were you like that night?
I just wanted to sleep. I wanted to, like, go to sleep and wake up and pinch myself. And
make it a different world.
Exactly.
Detective Julissa Trapp wanted to speak with both men, of course. But Cano lawyered up. So she tried Gordon, still in a wheelchair after his bike accident.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
How are you?
And I knew this was going to be a lot different than any other interview I had done. He's cunning, manipulative.
He didn't have to talk to you.
He did not have to talk to me.
Are you cold? Do you want a blanket?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
No.
But Detective Trapp has a way, as they say.
You're actually compassionate.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You were kind to him. You brought him a blanket. Food.
Here is our chips.
Yes, we actually shared 2 meals together.
It is spicy.
I told you to be careful.
Even so, Gordon was reluctant at first.
I can't talk to you.
Would you rather talk to somebody else?
I don't want to talk to anybody.
He watched me very carefully. If I swallowed too hard, if I looked at him differently, you know, he would say, what's wrong?
You had a weird look on your face when I said where, why?
When I said where?
So it was constantly trying to keep a poker face to continue to elicit information from him. And
did he try to play you? It's sort of...
Oh, I think he definitely thinks he did, for sure.
Bit by bit, she pulled out answers for herself and for those 4 mothers.
Does she go by the name Kayla?
It starts with a K. Kiana.
No, she told me her name was Kayla.
Detective Trapp Kayla presented him with photographs. He identified all 4 women.
So her, right?
Each murder went the same way, he said. He and Cano picked them up in his SUV, drove them back to the auto body shop where Gordon worked. They took turns having their way. And then, just as each woman prepared to leave...
strangled with my hands.
You strangled her?
Some of the details in that 13-hour interview were almost more than even a seasoned detective could stand to hear.
As he was hurting Martha, she told him, I didn't believe in God, what I do now. There's a part of me that's grateful that she found God at the end. It's disturbing to me that in response he said, you picked a hell of a time to start believing in God. I'll never forget that.
But she had it, a full confession. She called Jeray's mother, Jody.
I dropped to my knees. Detective Trapp gave me her word that she would find who killed my daughter.
Detective Trapp had kept her word. Now she bought three more rosaries and wondered, could she bring those women home? Gordon had told her all of them had been left in the same dumpster, the contents of which were brought here, Orange County's Brea Olinda landfill, where, except for Jeray, they all still were in there somewhere.
We did a lot of research, and we had every intention to try to dig for them.
But the bodies had to be 40 feet deep by now. Digging for them would cost millions. They might never be found. And the county couldn't afford that.
And they're just over there somewhere, you know? Mm-hmm. 40 feet down. Mm. What's that like? What's that feel like?
It's frustrating. It's frustrating knowing that they're here and we can't bring them home. That. It's like the one thing that the mothers want, and I get it. And to not be able to do that, it feels... it's incomplete.
Does it drive you crazy?
Yes, it does.
Kathy Menzies knows, logically, her daughter Kiana must be dead. But how to truly accept it without her body?
I would go there today and start digging if they would let me.
Matters, doesn't it?
It does matter.
Getting her back.
Yeah.
You give birth to them, you got to see them right through to the end.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Streets don't bother me.
In an attempt to make sense of it all, Kathy asked Detective Trapp and her partner, Bruce Lynn, to drive her to the place where the killers had picked up Kiana.
She wanted to go to this last spot. Why? May I ask why?
Kind of because it was like the last known spot that she was at. That I was told she was alive at that spot. So kind of a closure, you know, just to see where she was at when... before they took her, you know.
About broke her heart to do it. Take this tour of her daughter's last hours.
I think this is the dead-end street that Gordon and Cano entered and turned around. And somewhere in
here,
this little intersection right here is where she was at.
Just an ordinary place, but so painful.
It was hard. It's difficult to see. I mean, it's not what I expected, the area. I mean, you know, of course, what she was doing is no mother's wish. But just to see this area, to know that it wasn't what I envisioned. It wasn't a dirty, dark, nasty, gross area.
Kathy found some peace in that, the knowing, the seeing. But why Kiana's life was taken? So much harder to comprehend.
I don't think I'll ever be able to accept it. It's hard. It's hard.
Criminal trials are one way the grieving find answers. And with a confession on tape, the trial of Stephen Gordon looked like a formality. Or so the prosecutor might have hoped. And then the judge made that ruling. Oh, boy.
Coming up, a suspected serial killer, acting as his own attorney, turns the case against him upside down.
It's the piece that brings everything together. And now it's gone.
When Dateline continues.
Orange County Deputy DA Larry Yellen liked his chances against accused serial killer Stephen Gordon, especially when Gordon decided to act as his own defense attorney.
He's very bright. Very bright.
Smart enough to know he shouldn't ought to be doing that sort of thing.
Definitely. Smart enough to know that he shouldn't be representing himself.
But expectation can be a dangerous thing. Before the trial even began, Gordon struck the prosecutor's case a major blow. Remember that moment early in his interview when he seemed to reject Detective Trapp's questioning?
Yeah, I can't doubt you.
Would you rather talk to somebody else?
I don't want to talk to anybody.
Gordon argued that continuing the interview at that point was a Miranda violation.
Anything you say may be used.
Even though Detective Trapp had read him his rights at the outset.
Yeah, the right to the press.
The judge agreed. Ruled that the jury could not see a frame of Gordon's confession.
When he makes the ruling that it's out, it's a punch in the stomach.
Oh, man, because what are you missing then? Everything.
Well, a confession. It's the piece that brings everything together and focuses on the four girls, and now it's gone.
All of these women have a special meaning for me, and when it got thrown out, I had a really hard time.
But then Gordon asked for a meeting and sprang another surprise. He wanted Yellen to drop the rape charges.
And what would he give you in return?
He said, I'll give you a statement that you can use against me in this case.
Okay, Mr. Gordon, we're going to start by reading you your...
And so on the eve of trial, Detective Trapp once again sat face to face with Stephen Gordon. And he once again took her through each crime.
Fair to say that your intention was to pick up a prostitute and ultimately kill her?
Yes.
Okay.
That was played for the jury. And then? How bizarre was this? Gordon suddenly decided he wanted the jury to hear his first confession, too. Which meant that the mothers had to hear every graphic detail of their daughters' murders.
And then I thought, maybe I prayed that rosary a little too hard because now we've got two statements in.
The jury wasted no time convicting Gordon of four counts of murder.
Guilty of the crime of felony to wit.
They recommended the death penalty.
I'll order that the verdicts be recorded.
For four mothers, a measure of justice.
Thank you.
Kathy Menzies had sat through the entire trial, as brutal as it was.
What has it done to your understanding of human beings?
They're evil. There's lots of evil in this world. Lots of it.
The mothers would not have to sit through another trial.
Murder in the first degree, how do you plead to that, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty. In 2022, Frank Cano pleaded guilty to four counts of rape and murder. He was sentenced to life without parole. For Detective Trapp, there was a measure of relief. And finally, she gave those rosaries to four grieving mothers.
It's interesting to discover in this line of work that homicide detectives are actually softies.
I think that the more you allow yourself to feel, the better you're going to be as a detective. And we have to go to the dark places in order to find answers. The quicker we can get in and out, you know, the better it is for all of us.
Answers from dark places. We went to the jail where Gordon was kept before his transfer to death row. Here he was, a man who claimed to know the nature of his evil acts. But did he, we wondered?
I screwed up.
Is screwed up the right expression to use?
Probably not. I just didn't want to say it, what I really think.
Well, why don't you?
It's beyond evil, what happened. What me and him did was beyond evil.
But then came, sure enough, the excuse. He's worked it out in his head that the parole system is somehow to blame for his crimes. After all, as sex offenders, he and Frank Cano shouldn't have been permitted to be together. That was a parole violation. And the fact that their parole officers didn't prevent that violation, he said, means the state is responsible.
We chose to be together,
yeah.
But we were allowed. There's a difference.
What? No. Are you three?
What do you mean?
That's what little kids say to their parents. You let me do a bad thing. It's your fault.
No, I didn't say they let us do a bad thing. I said they let us sleep and hang out at the same spot, and they did. Beside what anybody
You're
believes.
You're going to parse that argument?
Until the day I die, because I know for a fact it's true.
What I want to know is, because that's on you, what was going on in your head to make you want to do it? To participate in whatever way you participated? To get whatever thrill you... What was the thrill? What was it?
I don't think there was a thrill.
Well, if there's no thrill, why'd you do it?
There's no thrill in watching women die like that. But I'm going to go back to it again and again. It was my anger issues that I have from everything that happened while we were on parole and probation.
We may never know exactly why Jeray was killed, or Martha, or Josephine, or Kiana. But there's one more mystery hiding somewhere in this mountain. The final mystery.
Coming up.
To me, she's an angel in disguise. An angel that carries a badge and a gun.
An angel whose job isn't done.
He looks at me and he goes, "You're missing one."
Four mothers, four dead daughters. There's sorrow, of course.
When they killed her, they killed me.
And a measure of solidarity to have each other, especially Priscilla and her Linda.
Now that we know what's happened to our daughters, I know we will still be friends until the end, because she's walking in the same shoes I am.
We asked them about Julissa Trapp.
This case was solved because of her.
To me, she's an angel in disguise. An angel that carries a badge and a gun.
Their own guardian angel who brought all of them answers. But how, the moms wondered, did two men who were supposed to be under supervision by parole officers, who were being tracked in real time via GPS ankle bracelets, how could they have committed the terrible crimes they were charged with?
How could this happen?
How can this happen? Why were they not being monitored?
But
it was definitely a hard question to get from the mothers themselves as well. Why wasn't it caught sooner?
Sure.
Can we actually look at the 14th?
As for Detective Trapp, there was one last mystery to solve.
Yes.
Because when she first talked to Stephen Gordon, he revealed something she wasn't expecting.
He looks at me and he goes, "You're missing one." Which caught me off guard, and I tried not to show too much emotion. And I said, "Okay." And that was the first time I learned about Jane Doe, was from him.
Okay.
Jane Doe. She works the street. According to Gordon, there was a fifth victim.
Did she say where she was from?
She said she was from Compton, but...
I feel a responsibility, because Jane Doe is not a missing person. She's an unknown, and I feel like if I don't look for her, who will? I know there is a family out there wondering where she is.
And so she looked. She combed through missing persons reports. She put up flyers, searched, prayed. And yes, bought another rosary.
Why is it so important to give Jane Doe a name? To you, personally.
I just think because she's so helpless. You're on the street, you're working as a prostitute, and you run into Steve Gordon and Frank Cano, and your last hours on this earth are horrific. And then they discard you like trash.
Trash. Detective Trapp is still haunted by trash. That keeps bringing her mind back here.
Even though it is a landfill, I mean, it is quite peaceful when it's quiet.
Somewhere under here, in addition to Kiana, Josephine, and Martha, there was victim number 5. And so Detective Trapp worked her sources until she had a name.
It would be reasonable to say, okay, that's her. She's
absolutely.
Here.
Logically, yes, absolutely.
And yet, when we first spoke with her, she couldn't quite bring herself to tell yet another mother her suspicions.
I not only have to go tell her she's dead, I have to tell her that she's one of these girls. So that's going to be hard, I think.
And then a couple of months later, she let us know she'd called on the fifth mother and delivered the news that Sable Pickett, just 19 years old, crossed paths with Gordon and Cano on the streets of Orange County and did not survive. No charges are pending for her murder, but another family can finally stop wondering. Homicide detectives often tell us they work for the dead. Up here on Landfill Mountain, we understood that a little better. As Detective Julissa Trapp gripped her rosary, the one for Sable, we walked away and gave her time. And our microphone picked up something.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. Blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Mountains of trash, things we use and cast away. But for Detective Julissa Trapp, this will always be hallowed ground.
It's hard to look at that and know that's where you ended up, but I know you guys are all in a better place, and I know that you're together and you're helping each other. You can rest now. And I can take it from here.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.